listening to Fangirl Sports Network's Get My Job on Blue Wire. I am your host, Tracy Sandler, and it is an honor today to be joined by ESPN Shelly Smith. Shelly is inspiring, candid, and all around amazing. She opens up about everything from overcoming cancer and a stroke to how to get your story while still being responsible. She opens up about personal and professional struggles, and this is an incredible podcast for anyone looking to work in the sports industry. So Fangirl Nation, let's get to it. Shelly, thank you so much for joining me today for Get My Job.
Tracy, how did you get this idea to start a podcast? That's what I really want to know. This is not about you. This is about me asking you questions.
All right, well, then here we go. You know, it's funny. With Fangirl Sports Network, we really are trying to create a community around women who are female fans and women who want to work in sports. And I wanted to create a platform also for women looking to work in sports and who wanted to get involved and create content around their favorite teams and all of that. Uh-huh. And so Get My Job, this is our first season doing it. We launched it this past September. And it really, I have to give a lot of credit to my marketing team who really came up with the idea of doing it. And I wanted to give, you know, young women coming into the industry and just people who've been in the industry a chance to listen to those who've been there, those who've been doing it, get advice, learn from obstacles and mistakes. And
awesome.
It's been,
yeah.
Thank you. It's been a lot
that's
of
really
fun.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, that's great. And you can have my job. Right now I'm about ready to give it up.
Oh, great. Well, in that case, you guys, this has been awesome. I've loved spending time with you, and we'll talk soon. this has been the most productive Get My Job and the most literal Get My
there
Job.
There you go. You can have it.
Great. Well,
no, I love my job. I love it. And I'm probably going to retire in the next, well, I don't know, 3 or 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and I will be sad. But
I'm
it's
sure
a great job.
So that was a good that was like a Tom Brady. I'll probably retire in the next 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years. I like that.
But I'm not gonna move into an $8 million house in Connecticut. That's the difference between me and Tom Brady.
And that's the only difference between you and Tom Brady.
That's the only difference. Exactly.
That's it.
I would have won Sunday though, but okay.
I have no doubt that is true.
Yeah, of course. Fire away.
All right. Well, so you've been doing this a while. You've been an incredible inspiration.
A long time.
What year, if you don't mind me asking, what year is this covering the NFL?
Well, I cover everything. So it's like I do whatever they tell me to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll work for food and money and drinks. And I got out of college in 1981. And I started with Sports Illustrated in 1987, mm-hmm. right before the Olympics in Korea. And then I moved over to ESPN in 92 part-time, and then I went full-time in 97. So you do the math, but it's a long time.
That is a long time. And was sports always the goal?
Yes. My mom was, we lost her a year ago. And she was the biggest football fan I know. And she used to answer the phone. We all went to Nebraska to school. And Nebraska would play Colorado, and she would answer the phone, screw CU. You know, she just was funny, and she loved the Broncos, and she loved to bet. And she and I had our own, like, syndicate, and it was just, we had so much fun. I mean, we never bet more than like $2, but mm-hmm. he was a blast, and it became very serious. So I actually went to college with the idea of becoming a secretary because I was very good at typing, and I thought, well, that's what I should do. And then I took a photography class, and then I took a news writing class, and I absolutely fell in love with it. Just, I think I have a natural curiosity for things, which has kept me going for how many years did we figure that out?
Well, if you've been a long time, 22 since you went full time at ESPN and 32 since you started at SI.
Very good.
Thank you.
I have a natural curiosity. I don't get tired of being nosy. I don't get tired. I need to know why something happened, what happened, who did what. And that has not changed in 32 years or whatever it is. But, and I think that's what keeps me going. It's because I have a natural passion for being nosy and wanting to know everybody else's business.
And that would serve you well as a reporter.
Yes. Yes, it does. It does.
Though I guess kind of piggybacking on that a little bit, because one of the things we do want to talk about in the show is giving people advice. And to a reporter who is just starting out or midway through his or her career, what is that fine line between being nosy and persistent and knowing when to pull back?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I often don't always do it, but you just have to have good judgment. And, you know, so you don't want to ask Tom Brady, you know, what his personal life is like with Giselle, or you do, but you know that's not appropriate. So you just have to use good judgment and good reasoning. And there's only been a couple of times when I've felt myself being pulled at, like, I shouldn't ask that. I shouldn't be there. And one of them was when Hank Gathers died suddenly. I don't know. You probably don't even know him. You weren't even born yet. But
I do know the story for sure.
You do? Okay.
I do.
So he died, and I was first person to the emergency room, and his mom came out of the emergency room just screaming. And I thought, oh my God, I don't know if I should be here. I stayed, but I didn't stay for long because there was a news conference going on upstairs. But I got the scene setter, you know, of his mom, just heart-wrenching. I'll never forget it. The way she was screaming and crying, and then the whole family was there and the doctors were there, and I just couldn't do it. I don't know how I would be now. Knowing me, I probably would have gone up and put my arm around her or something, you know. But at that time I was very young, and I was a little shocked by the situation. But that was one of the few times that I think I pulled back on something that I really wanted to know. And every other time I think, all right, it's my job. You got to do this. You got to find this out. There are times you don't want to be there. There was a time, after Hank died, I went to Philadelphia and did a story on his background, and I didn't want to walk up to houses and knock on doors, but I did. There are things you have to do in this job that you don't want to do, but you know you have to do it. But it's not very often. It's really not very often. And Nancy Tao was another one. We got beat on the story. And I had to go out to the neighborhood here in L.A. and knock on doors. And you know that scene in All the President's Men where they finally get somebody who invites them in and says, would you like some coffee? And they're like, yes, yes, I would. I would love some coffee. You probably don't know that movie either. But
I know. I do know the movie.
Okay. And so he's like, no, but my sister knows the guy who catfished Manti. And she's at a soccer banquet now. Would you like to come in? I went, yes, yes, I would like to come in. So, there's time. You have to just play it by ear, and you have to trust your own judgment and trust your own gut as to what the right thing to do is. And I can't think of any other good examples right now, but just life experience helps you a lot. And knowing what to do and what not to do helps you a lot, if that makes any sense. But
it does. And
all right,
do you,
good.
You, yes, no, that totally made sense. and I, that made a lot of sense. And I think it's very good advice. I actually have two kind of follow-ups to that. The first being, does everybody kind of have to be prepared sometimes to make the mistake and push too hard when they shouldn't, and that's how they learn? Or do you think that there's a natural instinct that should tell people now is when you stop?
Oh, geez, that's good. Probably a little bit of both. I mean, I think, I don't think I've ever pushed too hard. I did the story on Nebraska football, and Tom Osborne hated me for years after that. I don't care if people hate me. And I teach two classes at USC, and I just finished them last night. And I left him with the message, as long as you're professional, accurate, fair, and responsible, you don't care if anyone's mad at you or not. Mm-hmm. So as long as you're doing those four things, I think it's four, you're not pushing too hard. As long as you're fair, accurate, responsible, and professional, then you're not pushing too hard. So I think it's gut checking yourself every now and then and wondering, am I doing the right thing? Is this the right thing to be doing. And if you can answer yes to all of those, like I didn't speak to Kobe Bryant for 12 years because I reported on his rape trial. And I reported not so much on the trial, but I mean, I did report on the trial, but what I reported was that a lot of NBA teammates were not going to speak up around him because he broke what was considered a locker room code by ratting out Shaq to the police. He told the police, I should have just have done what Shaq did. Shaq's paid $5 million, you know, millions of dollars to women to keep them quiet. So that came out in the police report. And I reported that, and I have a lot of good sources. And they said, oh, he's going to walk on the bus and nobody's going to say a thing. He's going to walk in a room and nobody's going to say. So I reported that, and he came out the next day, and I showed up, and the PR person told me he's never going to speak to you again. And I was like, oh, all right. Well, I don't think they're going to be good for a while, so we'll be okay. But and they weren't. And I didn't. And I had my producer would go and ask the questions, and we would work him into the story. But, I mean, I can remember walking up to him on the court, and the PR director, everybody forgot about it except for me and him. Because he goes, yeah, we'll give you Kobe. And I'm like, what? And he goes, yeah. And so, and you can see it on TNT's coverage because he was doing Craig Sager, God rest his soul, one of my favorite people. And you can see Kobe turn and he talks to the PR guy. And then he goes, oh, hell no, because they were going to send him over to me. So it was very public for a while. And it's written in Roland Lazenby, wrote it in his book on Showtime. But I didn't care. It didn't affect my coverage. I knew I did nothing wrong. I was all those things I just mentioned. Mm-hmm. And he didn't see it that way. He didn't see it that way. And I didn't care. My bosses didn't care. They thought it was, you know, a great reporting job. And they knew I was those four things. And so it never affected our coverage. No, the public never knew, except for when I started talking about it. And so I think that wasn't pushing too hard, and that was a judgment call, but I felt like it was a necessary judgment call, because why wouldn't you ask about that? Mm-hmm. So there you have it. You know, sometimes it costs you, and sometimes you lose relationships, because as long as you're true to yourself, then nobody should care except for your bosses, you, and you're true to yourself. That's all that counts.
Wow, that's amazing. What an incredible story. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Well, and now we're BFFs, Kobe and I, because we made up, because I got breast cancer, and all I did was take breast cancer to get Kobe to talk to me after 12 years of silence. And then now we're BFFs. We are friendly now.
But you're friendly now. Well, time has a way of doing that. But you brought up something else I wanted to talk about. You did get breast cancer, and I think you were pretty public about that and talking about your journey there. And then you later suffered a stroke. You've obviously really been able to come back in spades. But can you talk about that and about how your kind of personal coverage of that, what it was like to be a little bit on the other side of that story?
Yeah, actually, you probably don't know this, but I had three different kinds of cancer. I had melanoma, breast cancer, and uterine cancer. All in a span of about 6 years. And then I've had two joint replacements. I'm having another one on December 10th because my mother gave me bad genes and I have arthritis. And yeah, I had a stroke, but I had a stroke in absolutely the best place you possibly could, which was the Warriors locker room. Mm-hmm. And they got me into an ambulance and they got aspirin in my blood, and it was an ischemic, and so it burst and it went, whatever. But it has changed my perspective on life, because first of all, I used to hate reading Twitter because people were really mean to me, but you get cancer and then suddenly they're very nice to you. And so I used to, you know, wake up in the middle of the night and read Twitter, which is so bizarre, but people were so nice to me. And it took me a long time to decide whether I wanted to announce it or not. And I was diagnosed in March, and I didn't announce it until October 1st. The day of breast cancer month. And I thought, should I do it? Should I not do it? Should I do it? I'm like, I'm just going to do it. And I push send. And all of a sudden my, you know, your phone blows up when you get a tweet. Ding, 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 ding. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And I think I was really one of the first. Robin Roberts was ahead of me and had it way worse than I did. But I was one of the first on-air reporters to announce that I had breast cancer. And then I'm sure I was the first on-air reporter to go bald on TV. And mm-hmm. I decided that wearing a wig wasn't me. I'm not that way. I'm the kind of person that I would wear colored contacts and they go, oh, your eyes are so green. I'm like, ah, they're contacts. You know, I just can't pull it off or lie mm-hmm. like that. And so I just went bald. And my first assignment was in Hawaii because it was Marcus Mariota's draft. And I went and I couldn't have been happier because it was windy and, you know, sand blowing everywhere. And I said to Trey Wingo on air, I said, this is the first time in my career I haven't had to worry about my hair because it would just, you know, blow all over. And it was liberating. And my oncologist told me that it would help other women. This is really why I decided, help other women and help break the stigma of going through chemotherapy. Because there is still a stigma and it's a very personal decision. And like Holly Rowe decided she got a wig and she wore a wig until they finally convinced her to take it off. Not they, I mean, the players that she was interviewing. So it was liberating. It was painful. It was uncomfortable. It was my good girlfriends came out and I call them now my chemo sobbies because they came out and helped me through chemo. And we end up making a good thing out of it. You know, it was a horrible thing to go through and I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy because it's scary and it's not fun. But I got through it and it's been 5 years now. So I guess I'm considered cancer free. And now if I could just get my joints to behave, then I'd be fine. But it was life changing. Absolutely.
Oh, I'm sure. But I think that's, you brought up a very good point that it was inspiring and helpful for other women. And yes. I think yes. your story, you know, has been, and that's so important. And I think as women, and we talk about this a lot on this podcast, mm-hmm. how important it is to support each other, that we're better yeah. together. And in this particular yeah. situation, that's something so personal, but really is an incredible thing that you did for so many women out there.
Well, thank you for saying that. I hope I did, and I hope I continue to do it. I continue to give speeches, and I just dedicated the Hunt Cancer Center here in Torrance, which was really a wonderful event. And my oncologist was there, and he introduced me. And he's very shy. He's an oncologist, for God's sake. And I got up and I said, probably very strange for you to interview me or talk to me with all my clothes on. And he turned right red. He couldn't stand it, but that's just me, you know, but I'm very proud of what I can do. Little things like that in the community to help. And I, you know, go to Relay for Life and I don't do a lot of cancer walks because I can't walk. Maybe next,
right,
week,
the joint.
Maybe next year.
Right. Maybe after the surgery.
Yeah. But in that part of my life, it's been. But you know what else is funny, Tracy, is that it's like you get cancer and they give you a trophy. I thought I got all these awards from places wanting to give me awards for no reason other than having cancer. And I said, what about my journalism? You know, what about the stories I did on Jake? And I did win an Emmy for Jake Olson, the blind kid from USC mm-hmm. who snapped the ball, who I told you about. And mm-hmm. You know, so, but I have all these trophies now and I don't know what to do with them. It's like when they're not participation trophies, they're worse. They're trophies for having cancer. And I'm like, I don't deserve a trophy for that. But we did do a fundraiser at my house and we raised $2,000, which is not a lot of money, but it's better than none. And the Breast Cancer Society sent me a trophy. So that one I do like.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
Well, speaking of the stories that you've done, there's the one that you mm-hmm. you got the Emmy for. And I think, well, and something also I'm really noticing in this conversation, and I think will translate very much to your work, is there seems to be a theme for you that you're a fighter and you're a doer and you're true to yourself. And that's why I think you've been successful in every mm-hmm. facet of your life. And so with that in mind, I'd love to talk a little bit about some of the stories you've covered. And what I was going to ask you, your most rewarding and your most challenging, you spoke about the Can't Gather story and that may end up being your most challenging, but if not, I'd love to hear what some of the others were, but first let's start with rewarding.
rewarding Jake Olson was we spent 9 years following Jake, and we first got the assignment. I was on my way to Notre Dame to cover USC Notre Dame. It was the Reggie Bush, Matt Leiner years.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a call from Michael Fountain, one of my bosses. I have bosses like up the waz. Anyway, he called me and he told me about this story, and I had to pull over off the highway because I was so struck by this 12-year-old boy who had a month of sight left that it just floored me. And I didn't know what to expect. And I got off, you know, out of my car at Notre Dame, and he was already on the field with his family, and I didn't know what they were going to do and what they were going to say. But fortunately, his mom doesn't like Oprah, because the people at his church were going to call Oprah, and she goes, no, I don't like Oprah. So they called game day, and we ended up spending and having a great time with him. And he is so funny. He is just hilarious. And he'll say things like, he has a standard joke when he goes to speak. We're doing a lot of speaking engagements because I egg him on and he eggs me on it. But he'll say, all right, raise your hands if you're a Bruins fan, meaning UCLA. And he goes, oh, I don't see any. Well, he's blind, you know, I mean, and we did a story when he started snapping, and he would look, the coach would have the board out, the whiteboard, writing on plays on a whiteboard, and he'd be leaning in like he was looking and watching it, and people don't notice these things, but I do, because I know what he's been through. And I remember the day he had his eye removed. I remember being extremely emotional, and that doesn't happen to me very often, you know, doing stories, but this one got me. And that one was very rewarding, and being able to win the Emmy and give a speech and thank him and his family was very rewarding. And Nancy Devaney was the producer, and she did a tremendous job of putting it all together. Well, I mean, editing it.
And
then challenging, the Hank Gather story was challenging because I was walking around North Philly. This is when I was still at Sports Illustrated.
Hmm.
That was incredibly challenging. I don't know what else. It's like, you know, I just landed I don't want to say it yet because I don't want to jinx it, but there are some stories that are really hard to land. All right, I did Michael Thomas. That was really hard to land, even though I've known him since he was in diapers. But I said, if it was easy, everybody could do it. So that's what I tell myself, like, every day. If this job was easy, everybody would be doing it. And so anytime I land a hard one, a really difficult get, and it's harder and harder to get the get because there's so many of us out here now, I tell myself, you know, you just work harder than anyone else and see what happens. And if you get it, you get it. And if you don't, you don't. And I worked on Lamar Odom, who I've known for 10 years, and I still haven't gotten him. And I just finally had to let it go because he's just not, he won't answer his phone. He won't answer anything. I spent 2 days chasing Allen Iverson, who had told me on FaceTime, oh, I love you. I love you. Yes. Come down. We'll do anything you want. Blah, 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 blah. And then I couldn't find him. He didn't show up. He didn't. And we had an extensive crew hired for 2 days. In, I forget where we were, Atlanta, North Carolina, I don't know. But sometimes you have to just let it go. And those two will probably bug me the rest of my life, Lamar Odom and Allen Iverson. And, you know, I see Allen do things on TV, but I know he's being paid because it's Adidas sponsoring it or whoever he's with these days.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are not good people. And I just have to, Lamar is a good person. I just don't think he knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think his brain is fried, and I think he's confused, and I know he just got engaged, but it's difficult. Some people are not good people, and some people don't care if they win you over or screw you over. And once you get that through your head, then it's a little easier to accept defeat. But I'm still going to try, because if it was easy, everybody could do it. So I do tell myself that all the time.
I think that's good advice, though. And I think also what you just said is some people don't care if they win you over or screw you over. And that's not just good advice in this industry. It's good advice for life.
Exactly.
Some people just don't care. And when you
don't care,
when you can accept that in life, I think it makes everything a lot easier.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Well, I was going to say, I think that's what my illnesses and joint issues have taught me, is not to take everything so seriously.
That's probably true, and probably also not personally.
Right, exactly.
So how have you seen over the last several years, how have you seen this industry change for women and opportunities grow?
I think there are a million opportunities for women in this industry. Maybe not necessarily on air, but if you want to edit, you want to produce, you want to be in PR, you want to be in marketing, there are a million opportunities. And there are on-air opportunities. There's podcasts, there's radio shows, there's blogs. And I think it's only gotten better for women. And we see tons of women out in the field now. And it used to be like I used to know everybody, every female there was. But now we see a lot of people out there. And I think that the industry has changed. The rules haven't changed, but the mediums have changed. There are, like I said, podcasts and radio and blogs and tweets. And I mean, the rules have not changed. And some people don't understand that the rules of journalism still exist. And they exist even more so, I think, with social media. And I've been guilty myself of tweeting something I shouldn't have and not following the rules of journalism, not checking it out, not double checking it out, not confirming two sources. And I did it. I was at USC, and honestly, I was scared because I had heard that it was right after Las Vegas, and I had heard that there was an active shooter on campus. And I was sitting in the campus police station when I heard it. So I tweeted it and I called the news desk and went on radio. And then as I was thinking about it, I kept saying, it's not confirmed. It's not confirmed. I had to backtrack. And I learned a valuable lesson that day. And I think it was because I was scared that there was a shooter on campus and we didn't know where it was. And it wasn't a shooter, it was somebody who made a gun sound. And then everybody panicked because it was the day after Las Vegas. And that's when I learned, it doesn't matter if you're scared, if you're embarrassed, if you're humiliated, whatever. You need to follow the rules of journalism. And I will never make, I hope, never make that mistake again. And I was able to correct it and undo any damage I could have done. But the mediums have changed. The social media has changed everything. And now anybody can tweet and put out news. And I don't know if you know this. Yesterday, Sports Illustrated reported. Sports Illustrated, I mean, that's a pretty reputable magazine,
Yes.
even though they just sold it and fired everybody. But they reported that Clay Helton, the coach at USC, had been fired. And everybody picked it up. Bleacher Report, everybody. And it wasn't true. And they had to retract it. And I thought, how does that happen in this day and age? I can see someone tweeting it, or you can get the onion. And a lot of people believe the onion, which I think the onion's hilarious. But it bothered me that people would just pick it up and people just copy each other. They just, oh, well, Sports Illustrated ran with it. We should run with it. No, you can't just do that. You have to double confirm it. And I know Clay Helton. I'm sure it hurt him. And I'm sure, well, he's heard these things before, but you have to know the rules. And a lot of people who are tweeting and Facebooking and Instagramming and TikToking, whatever the heck it is out there now, they don't know the rules. And so before you jump to a conclusion, know the rules and know what legitimate journalists have done to get their information. And I'm surprised that Sports Illustrated did that. But again, it's changed so much. They have, downsized and they're not paying people. And that's when the quality hurts.
Well, it feels like with social media, it's become more important to be first than right.
Yep, exactly.
But I think an actual rule of journalism is it's more important to be right than first.
Exactly. And I was in, this is kind of a morbid story, but I was in laying on the gurney going into radiation, and I had my phone in my hand because Lamar Odom was getting ready to decide whether he was going to re-sign with the Lakers or he was going to be a free agent. And so I'm like, I can't go in yet. I can't go in yet. Like, leave me out in the hallway. And I had my phone, and I finally got the call, and I called it in, and I got beat by a minute. A minute. by someone in my from ESPN in my own company. And so I thought, well, I'm never going to do that again because that's ridiculous. That's just stupid. Putting off my radiation because of Lamar Odom. But, you know, that's the business, and it's so competitive, and everyone wants everything from everyone. And it's really hard. It's the hardest it's ever been in my career right now because it's just hard to get things. But again, if it was easy, everybody would do it. So that's what my mantra these days.
It's a good mantra, and it's true.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess somewhat along those lines, I was going to ask, what is maybe the number one mistake that you see women, and maybe it's not just women, but people making, breaking into the sports industry, and in this age of social media, what is, if you knew someone starting their career, what is one piece of advice you would give them to make sure they do, and then to make sure they don't do?
Well, always double check your facts. Think before you push send on anything. Work harder than anyone else. Learn everything you can about the industry and the different forms of the mediums that you're wanting to work in. And just be smart. You know, the kids I had last night at USC, they're the smartest kids. They go, you say that to every class. I go, no, I don't. You guys are the smartest class I've ever had. And we were debating, and usually these kids are debating and they're just not good, but these kids were so sharp. And I thought, wow, they passed me by. But read everything you can. Get out and don't hide behind email. I have another class I teach that you have to get someone to come in and do it like a TV show, like an Oprah type show.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I emailed her 3 times. And I said, don't hide behind emails. Get out. Go knock on the door. And it's not comfortable. It's not easy. But go out and ask her. And, you know, ask the person you want. And don't hide behind emails or phone calls or if you can. You know, sometimes you have no choice. But we have people who are talent bookers who are on the phone all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I still don't believe that that's a way to get someone to go on the air. I got a guest coming up, the one I was telling you about, that I don't want to jinx it, but I went to everything he was involved in, every banquet, every speech, and I got him. But I don't want to jinx it, so I don't want to tell you who it is. Well, I'll tell you off the air. Good. Well, when is this going to air, this podcast?
It's going to air in the next month.
Okay, Jerry West.
Okay.
That's who it was, and I went to, yeah, that's okay. Oh. He knows. He knows about it. I just don't want anybody else to know about it.
I will. Do you want me to? I can cut it out of the recording.
If you want, I don't. It doesn't really matter.
It's up to you.
Yeah, no, it's okay. You can leave it in.
Okay.
But I went to a speech that he gave, and he's very shy. And I hosted a dinner, and I went to a different speech, and I went to a class that he spoke at, or I was going to go, but I didn't end up going. And I finally said, all right, I just got to go through PR, but I did. But you just gotta, you cannot just email somebody and expect them to say, yes, okay, I'll do that. Especially if it's somebody who's not comfortable speaking in front of people, and that's Jerry. And he's a wonderful man, but he's very busy and he's very picky. But he said, yes. So, you know, you never know. Unless you ask and you go after something, you never know. So I guess that's my biggest advice, is don't hide behind emails and telephone calls if you can.
Mm-hmm. I think that's good advice. It kind of goes back to what we were talking mm-hmm. about at the beginning, the difference between being persistent, that fine line. But mm-hmm. and what you've said throughout the podcast, if you work harder than everybody else and you're more persistent, then you are more likely
mm-hmm.
to get what you want. And I think that's
right. I did draw the line at going to the strip club to find Lamar. Although I was a little desperate, so I'm like, maybe I should just go to the strip club. Oh, that would be great front page news. Shelly Smith goes to the strip club in Alabama. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to do that. So that's the perils of being known in the business. There are a lot of much, you know, wonderful things about being known in this business and having that credibility, but that would not be one of them. That would have been a bad decision on my part.
That's fair. That's very funny.
Mm-hmm.
Though the image of it is great.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, hi, have you seen Lamar Odom? Have you seen Lamar Odom?
Excuse me.
That is very funny. So you've been lucky enough to write a couple of books, one with Keyshawn Johnson, which I would imagine was a really great experience. I'd love to hear more about that. And then one specifically about
horrible.
Female athletes. It was horrible? Oh, see, there we go. Yeah. All right, let's start with Keyshawn.
Well, they went 1-15 that year. So there was no happy, you know, we won the game. They were 1-15. I had to, like, listen in on his conversations with other people and write down what he was saying. And then, and he absolutely thinks he typed it himself. But it was a good experience in that he trusted me to do it, and we'll be friends forever. James Girls Play, on the other hand, was written for my daughter, who is a soccer player, and she ended up playing at Oregon and was all Pac-12 or Pac-10 or whatever it was at that point. And she was having a lot of trouble with issues that affect female athletes, like parents yelling at them from the sidelines, eating disorder. She didn't have an eating disorder, but eating disorders, you know, training too hard. And so my book agent hooked me up with a woman who is a sports psychologist who had been wanting to write a book on the very same topic. And I said, oh my gosh, this will help my daughter. I'm in. So we did that. And it was a very enlightening book. And I think still a lot of the rules still pertain. And it was, you know, sexual assault, sexual abuse. And I'm sure the Nassar investigation would have been major in this book, but we obviously didn't know about it. But it was an interesting book to write. And then I also wrote Herm Edwards' book, which was Life Lessons, which I really enjoyed that. And he's an amazing guy. And he and his wife are just terrific. And they just beat, who did they just beat at ASU? Oh, they beat Oregon. And so he's having a lot of success at Arizona State, and they're really fun to be around. So that was a great book to write, too. And then I've started writing a book on Al Davis, and then he died. He died, and so I had to change all the he is to he was. No, not really. I mean, I did, but it was too hard. There are people who wouldn't talk about him. They were afraid of him. They're even afraid of him in death. And I mean, I haven't given up on it, but I'm pretty close. But I have all my notes, and I have good stuff from when he was alive. But I thought he would cooperate with me, and he ended up not cooperating with me. In fact, he called and disguised his voice. I'm sure it was him or one of his flunkies. You know, yeah, you can't write this book, Mr. Davis. And I'm just like, what? You know, I've just never heard of such tactics. And so that one's still in my filing cabinet, but we'll see. Maybe someday.
Is there anything in this industry that still surprises you?
Well, that did.
that's what made me think.
I know. He's so weird that it doesn't really surprise me. You know what? I don't like the Players Tribune. I think it gives too much license to the athletes, and they can write whatever they want. They love it, but I don't like it because there's no checks and balances. You can write anything you want. And there's nobody saying, no, that's not true, or that's not fair, and that didn't happen that way. And that's the way real journalism is. And the Players Tribune, they get a lot of players who just want to get their message out, and that's how they do it. So that surprised me that took off. I like Derek Jeter a lot, and I'm sure he thought it was a great idea, and I'm sure he still thinks it's a great idea. But I wish athletes wouldn't do that, because there's nobody checking them. You know what I mean? So you can come out and you can be Lamar Odom and say, oh no, I didn't do any drugs. I didn't go to that brothel, when you know for a fact he did, you know? So I'm not saying that ever happened, because it didn't, but it's just not good to be able to let someone have free rein like that without an editor or a journalist checking to make sure everything they write is legal and kosher and everything else that we do.
Changing topics a little, and then we're going to move into five fun facts, which is my personal favorite part of the podcast.
I know, I saw that.
I do it. I don't. You should check out Shelly. I do. I do five fun facts with the 49ers players, and we do just like iPhone videos, and you know, they're short, they're like off the cuff, and they share five fun facts about themselves. And so it's become pretty popular, and therefore I've just kind of become known for the fun facts. So we had to make it part of this podcast. So,
but we'll get
to that in a minute. First though, I'd love to know for you, and this I think would be helpful just generally for people listening, what is a criticism you received early on that may have been very difficult to take, but really helped to shape your career?
Well, I remember I told you I made a mistake in baseball in the College World Series. I was taught, and I just had this conversation with another writer, and he remembers it too. I was taught that you always take the biggest number and you use that as your lead. That was the AP style. You know, so-and-so went 3 for 4, da, da, da. Well, I looked down at the score sheet and I didn't have a clue what I was doing. And I wrote, somebody had 18 putouts. And that is just a ridiculous stat. But it was the biggest number I could find. And I didn't even know what a putout was. What it is, you know, you throw to first base and that's a putout.
Oh, I didn't know that either. I love baseball.
Yeah,
that's
I know.
Funny. No idea.
I know. And I was ridiculed to the point where everybody still remembers it except for me. But I learned, don't do something without asking. I would rather not ask a question than ask a stupid question. So I will stay quiet. And that was like one of the biggest mistakes I've ever made. And it's still, it's embarrassing. It's quite embarrassing. And the fact that people remember it is, and they're like, we can't believe you of all people did that. I said, yeah, I know. That's what you asked me, right? What have I done?
Yep.
That was it. Fortunately, there was one I made recently. I said somebody had not won Super Bowl and they had won 2. And I fortunately caught it before, but I was mortified that I didn't remember that. I don't remember what team it was. Because we helicopter in, that's what they call it. They say, all right, go to Florida and do this, and go to Memphis and do that, and go to Denver and go to, you know, 49ers. And so you have to cram like crazy before you go cover a lot of these games. So that's what I end up doing. And then it goes right out of my head afterwards because I can't remember anything.
Well, that's like studying in school. When you cram, you'll remember it for the test, yes. But then you're not going to remember it beyond that, which is fair.
Exactly. I think so too.
All right. So it's time. Are you ready for 5 fun facts?
I'm ready.
All right. So everybody on Get My Job gets the same 5. And that's what really on this particular one, that's what makes it fun because we get so many different amazing answers. So number one, what is your favorite moment in sports?
When Jake Olson snapped blind during the USC game against Western Michigan a couple of years ago. That was, I couldn't run. Well, this is, you know, my joint issues. I couldn't run.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran down the sidelines to see him snap. And that will still be my favorite moment in sports.
That's awesome. That's awesome. What is your life motto? Though I feel like you've given us a few throughout the pod, but.
Well, I could give you a joke one, which is, you know, drink more, care less. In fact, we made a song about it. But I guess it's to be nice to everyone, you know, no matter what. And not because it's the right thing to do. It's because it makes you feel good. And it really does.
Do you have a go-to workout, though? I know with the joints, maybe not. But
yeah, right now it's just lifting my arm, you know, to drink a beer. No, I used to do CrossFit and then the joints went out. So now I just joined a gym and I barely ride the recumbent bike. I barely go in circles, but I will start again in probably a month.
I like lifting your arm to drink a beer. That sounds like a good workout.
Yeah, you know, why not?
Why not? Do you have a go-to coffee or tea order?
I'll drink anybody's coffee, gas station coffee, with cream.
Okay. And that's very easy. Well, you can find that anywhere too, which is helpful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then a book every woman should read.
Well, I'm reading Bob Iger's book right now, and I'm not saying this because he's my boss, but it's a really good book on leadership. So I would suggest that one. But I also read just to escape. So anybody's trashy mystery novels I would read, but I think Bob Iger's book, and again, I know I'm being politically correct, but it's really good, and it's really interesting what's gone on at Disney and with all the movement back and forth. So, but I also like Sheryl Sandberg's and Lean In. I thought that was good too.
Okay. I think those are both excellent recommendations.
Yes. Well, and Nancy Drew. I love Nancy Drew when I was growing up.
Yeah. I love Nancy Drew. She was my favorite.
And I used to think that each number that as they would number, as they would go up, would be scarier. So like number one wasn't as scary, but number 40 was scarier. But that's mm-hmm. not the way it worked. But
you were always going to be a journalist. She wasn't a journalist, but she was an investigator.
She was a detective. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of what we do is detective work. And another thing I would suggest is learn how to find open records, because open records mm-hmm. is a really hot commodity these days. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Shelley. This has been absolutely fantastic.
Well, Tracy, you're so nice to say that and to call me, and let's have lunch next time I'm up there.
I would love it. We'll talk to you soon.